Are we ready for a little death and resurrection show tonight? Woo! There we are. Woo! So we begin with our getting ready together with the ancient sacred chants, which we remember as precedes ah. So let's outgas like and then it goes with the ancient sacred chant of got to get to. There we go, team. That's great. And that is also, it's a trick. We are all breathing together with our and ah. And I love learning that in sumo wrestling, the referee will stand between the two sumo guys and will not start until they're breathing together. Mm. And I think that's how the debate should start and everything. Mayor Pete, you're off rhythm. There you go. Come on, there we go. So... So I'm going to read the copy for this talk, just because it's quite different than what's in the published thing here, which is a little tamer down there. But first I have some coyote here from my great ally ancestor Stella Coyote. Yes, thank you. Calling in all the coyote allies, Uranus, nature's evolutionary genius tricksters, rising right behind us, you know, with coyote intelligence. So I have it with muti, coyote hair, and a little bit of Syrian tobacco, and a little bit of cannabis as our special muti. Muti means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. And so we say, O spirit of the liberating trickster redeemer within all of us, you know, awaiting this crucial moment, you know, open the path for each one of us that we may contribute our gifts to the community at this time of dire beauty in a way that is reciprocal blessing. That'll do. Okay.
Ashe!
So, yes. So our write-up is, this is Sufi Aikido Trickster Guide to Redemptive Underworld Magic. There we go. An evening of astro-mytho-political guiding metastory. So we say, by cultivating a camaraderie of jaunty aplomb in dangerous times, we out-enthuse the Dementors. This is important. You know, again, I see your enthusiasm and raise you, okay? And we swoosh all reactive polarity into responsive, liberating spirals.
Woo! Oh, yes. Fly those bats, girlfriend. Do it.
I have a bat sock. We have elaborate high-tech props here. That's good. Okay. That's right. We have all been assigned a customized cauldron of death rebirth into which outworn structures are collapsing and in which we are invited to toss all corruption and cruelty. And what shall we envision ladling out? Structures of supportive solace, effective dedications to collective well-being, irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love, metaphoric agility, democratic animism. May the hubris of humanism be humus for the truth of animism, and that our rogue species may have manners to humbly cooperate with nature's guiding genius, a.k.a. trickster. Again, there. All right, that's how it's meant to read. So astrology really, again, I love this language so much, and it's got so many facets, but it is an exquisite language of our interior psyche and its connection through a thin membrane we call identity with the whole large, pulsing, cultural, and even biological conversation. Mm. Whoa. Mm. So nothing is strictly, it's micro to macro, and back to micro again in this DNA spiral. Mm. So nothing is strictly personal. No joy, no suffering, no crime, no illness. It all belongs to the collective, you know, in our connectedness. And we go, ah, so... We have all been assigned a customized underworld. Let me introduce some of the patterns of the collective. Right now, many of you know Saturn and Pluto getting closer together as part of 2020. They will be exact on January 12th, 2020, but presiding over the whole thing. So it's the age of Capricorn. Forget the age of Aquarius. We're going backwards. It's the age of Capricorn. There we go. Which is all about wise governments and governance and pragmatic mysticism, you know, which we are here to do. And so we've all been assigned a customized underworld with which our task is to metaphorically cooperate in some way. So, in our part of our dedication is, you know, may our manner of relating be an offering serves liberation rather than an imposition serves colonialism and other ugly words, no matter what we call ourselves. So all of this is aspires to be offering, you know, the micro to the macro. So, again, language autonomy. We take diagnostic terms of anything, ADHD or any kind of illness, and use the word maybe once to start the conversation, and then we talk about the story. So 6 months ago, I was diagnosed with having inappropriately enthusiastic cells. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. That's how I first told it to the... To my Monday class, you know, again, boundaries about our own interior experience. But I've often said, you know, Venus in Scorpio straight up overhead, Neptune's trining it, that there's nothing so personal that I wouldn't share if it were useful to the whole team, because we're all in this dream together. So I said, well, so my job, my task, and it's sort of a full-time task, is to out-enthuse these inappropriately enthusiastic cells whose primary characteristic is they've lost the capacity to cooperate. Mm-hmm. And so they have no respect for boundaries. And so I go, ooh, this is really relevant globally, right? I mean, this is the primary metaphor that we got going here. And it's when you're in the underworld, and we all have our different assignments here, there's certain things we really practice what we've been proffering, going, all right, what does this mean that I've been saying for years? How do we apply this, you know? And magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything, not condone it, but again, this is the Sufi Aikido spiraling dynamic. But often I was reminded of the jaunty contribution of Dorothy Parker, who used to always answer her phone going, what fresh hell is this? You know? Because that's also part of the thing, going, what the, proceeds, oh, all right, okay. But I also, you know, but what are we becoming? And this opportunity of kind of death, rebirth to reinvent ourselves in some cauldron-y fashion. Because I took to Dorothy Parker's other famous saying, of many, but she says, every morning I get up and I brush my teeth and sharpen my tongue. And I go, yeah, I like becoming that. I love becoming that. So navigational narrative autonomy, you know, when I began to tell a few people about, going, okay, and, you know, integrative treatment, lots of, you know, allies and backup and stuff, but the orthodox treatment, you know, in which allies were like, no, that's a good thing to do. Many other people are appalled, like, no, don't do that. But again, we are all, you know, autonomy is a sacrament. And so the divination, everything speaking to us, and poisonous allies. We're going to talk about snake medicine and poisonous allies as really useful. And so right at this time when I was contemplating this daunting journey, my cat brought a copperhead into the house. And I was like, what's Kitty playing with behind the cat? Oh my God, this writhing color, like, oh, that's not usually seen inside. And what it meant was that she would have had to have carried this snake. We have cat walkways because, you know, it's a democracy. It's how cats would live. So I have elaborate cat walk. So it means that she would have come in from her catarary and taken the cat walkway all across the living room and then through the little cat door downstairs and then into the downstairs. And oh my God. So I was very girl, like, oh my God, there's a snake in my house. And then it's like, okay, move the cat. There we go. And then the cat had somewhat dampened the enthusiasm of the snake. So So I was like, all right, we're friends here. We're friends. We're forming partners, you know, and there's a window high up here, and I've got a little dustbin, and we're going to work this out together. There you go. Okay. So a friend who was a wonderful mythological friend, you know, like we all need to be for each other, you know, said, oh, isn't that a great dream? Isn't that a great tarot card that, you know, the poisonous snake came into your house but did not harm your cat or you? I'm like, we're on. All right. We're on for poison. We're really up for this poison thing, you know, poisonous allies. And it's also part of this dynamic, you know, if it's a Saturn theme about, you know, inappropriately enthusiastic cells that have lost the capacity to cooperate and have no sense of boundary respect. So the boundary theme is interesting for all of us to have Saturn so that we have boundaries, but not so impermeable that we can't receive help, right? This is a time in which all of us, we all need each other, right? And I remember this quote from Kabir, Robert Bly's version of Kabir, in which he said, one day you decided to go off on your own and do it all alone by yourself, and that's why everything you do has some weird failure to it. You go, well, that's fun. And then there's a little short Mabinogian piece. We have two things from the Mabinogian spaced apart, but I use this a lot. I use a lot of sourdough starter, you know, that, but it really means something. So in the Mabinogian, which are collected 12th century, and there comes a moment where the elders get together and go, ah, the men just found out they have something to do with children. And things were going so well before this. But we can see what's going to happen. Children and women will become property. Humans will set forth on their alone, individual journey until they lose kinship not only with each other, but with nature herself. And then the earth might die. And then at that point, some people will keep all the value of their individual journey, but rejoin back into participatory kinship in the whole collective dream. And here we are. So it's like so many things, you know. Rick Tarnas has a map of, you know, human journey of, we start off in embedded animism, and the little sense of self is like a little dotted line, and then we head out into pyramids, and we're going up, uh-oh, we're getting great knowledge and groovy, you know, Egyptian geometry and everything, but we're getting very high up, and then we get church and state steeples, and humans as the measure of all things, and we go, oh, okay. And then we get to the modern world, and psychologists go, well, it's all just nonsense, right? But the little sense of self is now a solid line, just at tremendous isolating cost. And now we go again, spiraling back to participatory animism, having gone the whole journey through. So I like a longtime and recently rekindled ally, Bruce Damer, who works for NASA and many things on the origins of life. And he has a longer buildup, but he goes, and the origins of life is community. And we go, oh, of course, right? And, you know, we know from Paul Stamets the great stories of slime mold, you know, again, little individuals that come together as a community because the community solves crisis. But there's been a new slime mold discovered that has been called the blob, right, unimaginably. But it has 72 sexes.
Wow.
It's like, wow, we're so limited. You're on. That would be the LGBTQ. Right, and the bathroom signs are really long, right? There we go. 72. And it can heal itself. So So again, the little individuals, then community, you know, with design sense. And then it's also in the myths, you know, the Arthurian legends, myths don't really end. They get put on pause, and we are here to hit play, right? So the Arthurian legends were an experiment of wise governance dedicated to protecting life. And what passes for the end of the Arthurian legends, you know, all the really hip people go away. Merlin goes off to the nymphs to take Pilates classes in the woods. Arthur goes to Avalon to go learn about the divine masculine or something. And so they all leave, right? But it's said that they would come back. And this is all the myths. High John the Conqueror, the great trickster redeemer of the South. It's said that he goes to reside in High John the Conqueror root, and like King Arthur, to await the world's call at a time of danger, when we need the positive yang to dance with the positive yin. We go, now would be really good, really good. So it's the diaspora. Wow. And all of that and all of these, this all lives in us too. The fun and then the diaspora going off into exile. But also remember the word ecstatic comes from ecstasis. It means to stand outside. So I love it when people are like, that group doesn't give me any respect. And I go, that's because you have an ecstatic relationship to it. Lucky old you. How wonderful. So this positive intrigue to keep all the value of our individuality, this thin membrane, right, and rejoin the choreography of creation. That's kind of part of what we're up to here doing. And so how shall we dance with demons? There's a lot of teachings of this, but now we're rummaging through everything we know and everything in our DNA, going, there must be something about our current situation and the ancient books. God, you know, and the gods are like, we made it so grotesquely vulgar, we just thought it would be incredibly simple for you guys, but apparently not. So how do we dance with demons, right? And so if what is rogue, you know, has lost the capacity to cooperate, then cooperation is the antidote. I was talking, you know, all these medical adventures, and so many people are on the related adventure, or whatever, everybody. But I go, my red blood cells need enthusiasm. And a friend said, so red, very Mars, you know, and she said, if we change one chemical in our hemoglobin, it's chlorophyll. Right. Mm. We're that close, right? To mammal plant. Our blood is very close to chlorophyll. I go, I love that. So in the underworld, we practice everything. We practice everything that we've ever learned, you know, but we're tricksters, right? Not perfectly. It's an aspiration. And I did like my acupuncturist saying, you know, you want to keep your familiar, you know, rascal self aura there, otherwise your soul will be confused. So every now and then, you know, smoke something. So I'm like, you're my kind of acupuncture guy. That's really great. Okay, because everybody else is very holy, and certainly the you know, everybody's got an opinion about what everybody else should be eating, certainly in the world. But it's true. There are informed protocols, and experimentation is good. But I also like, you know, a friend said that when she was in the macrobiotic community in Boston, which they all came to call the macro-neurotic community, she said about one of their community was diagnosed with cancer, right? And they were so mad at her, right? Because they are eating the diet that's supposed to cure that and prevent that. And they were like really angry. People get quite angry when their story is disrupted, going, no. So she still liked them, but she came to their dinners eating giant bags of M&Ms. And she goes, I'm just going for joy, you know? And right. She was fine too. So, you know, there's many paths. It's the quality. And Jornus Trickster says, we are big gods or whatever you want to call us, dancing with all of you. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice, and then whatever you do is going to fly. Mm-hmm. So this idea of discerning what is liberating and what is imprisoning. Solitude is liberating. Hiding is imprisoning. They can look the same, but they feel different. So we're here to cast off the, and sometimes prison masquerades as freedom, very sneaky. That's what we have a lot of, people being snookered by their desire to not be snookered, going on, you know, and we're spell breakers. But practicing everything, certainly that I've been proffering, and so magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, going, all right, how do we do that? Okay. Which goes with redemption lies in brewing medicine for others. And I go, right. So, you know, because of exploring the whole, going, this is an amazing journey. People are doing this, and it's a huge business, and it's corrupt and crazy and marvelous and not without beauty, and there's wizards and, I mean, and an incredible community in the waiting rooms that are always full. So how to metaphorically cooperate? So I did head into radiation, and it's like, wow, this is very trippy. But again, a wonderful friend said, remember, you know, in the 70s, all these psychics used to say you were a teacher soul from Arcturus. It's very high radiation in Arcturus. It's probably good for you. I'm like, that's the spirit. That's the way we want to go with it. But again, so part of the composting was going, no, in the outer world, you know, the dementors of doom, you know, threatening planetary extinction and feeding monstrosities, really feeding on cruelty, you know, they thrive on conflict, polarity, and opposition. And we're heading into more of that, right? $1.6 million a week is being spent by the Trumps on Facebook. You know, so there's a lot, you know, coming at us, you know, and so our discernment is crucial. So, but also they do horrible things which make us, but that strengthens them. As Ursula Gwynne says, we strengthen whatever we oppose. So again, what is this Sufi Aikido kind of dynamic? So right away, I mean, always for a long time, but in the metaphor, how we speak of our circumstance, personal and political and collective, you know, going, no battle. Because people come up to you, go, well, we heard you were battling this. No, dancing, not battling. Everybody's, you know, obit, they lost their battle. You'd lose the battle. Battles are to be lost, right? But this dancing, and so, you know, the snake medicine was interesting, and the snake had come into my house, and we go there, and then the spiraling Sufi Aikido kind of quality. So my visualization, which really helped a lot, was, okay, radiation going, because every now and then you go, oh, right? And then you go, oh, all right, okay. So it's like, and you go, okay. So I would see, you know, these wrathful Dakinis, we'll get to them, more Sufi snake dancers, you know, spiraling and swooshing the inappropriately enthusiastic cells, you know, into the cauldron of oblivion in my body and the body politic. Mm. Right? And that felt good. And if we think of everybody under adverse circumstances of whatever kind, brewing medicine. It's in many traditions that the strongest blessings are from those under adversity. And so, and that, again, it felt like a really good thing to be doing. And I have a friend who's in a related journey circumstance, wonderful ally that I've known for decades, Lucia, and she has been a doctor, Médecins Sans Frontières in Africa. And when she was there, she met a young woman who was the only survivor of her village and who was pregnant with a rape. And Lucia was about to leave, but found this young woman, you know, a place to stay where she could have food for her last 3 months of pregnancy and give birth and everything, and was really in strong touch. I mean, so much that we were together watching the video of this little baby, child of rape, hope, being born. And due to some miracle, Lucia got the mother and the little baby from Africa green cards to, well, we worked on a trickster thing. Again, trickster can go around all these things, you know. And they joined her where she was head of a native clinic in Alaska. So from Africa to Alaska, through all these things. I mean, there's these diasporas all over. And whereupon Lucia was diagnosed with advanced, you know, metastatic breast cancer. Like, whoa, okay. She's doing good. She's doing really good, you know. And she said that all the treatments that she's been doing, the doctors are so impressed that they want to now hire her. And she goes, I've never worked for rich people before, but this is kind of a gas. I'll work it. And also refugee agencies came to support her because these two refugees, you know, she's their total support. But so it's going well. But I was telling her about my interest in, you know, this. What does everything want? Even the Dementors, it wants oblivion and rebirth. You know, and I said, so here's the visualization. She goes, yeah, I'm with you on that, absolutely. And let's imagine that these inappropriately enthusiastic cells, you know, into the cauldron of oblivion to be reborn as the energy to regenerate forests. Right. Or to, you know, help cooperate with all the sea creatures to regenerate that. And I go, what a good idea. Again, if all of us under adversity could imagine that which is adverse being swooshed and spiraled into and liberated into regenerative force. And I go, again, these are experimental. It feels good. Right. So the theme of poisonous allies is strong. My late great ally, Nelita Anderson, raised from birth as a kahuna in Hawaii, she said, we had to learn poison and harm in our training, not to use them. But in the body of a person or the culture, the killing points are the same as the healing points. The difference is intention. It's that Scorpio deep access. And I always kept that. So for all of us, we get to do vows and magic tonight, but You know, Saturn says, you know, we know you're all really good people. We know you're all good. It's a mere formality. You know, just sign here at the bottom of this imaginary page that your skills, your discernment, your diagnostic capacity is to heal rather than to harm. And we sign, right? And it goes, you may proceed. That's good. It's also very much like wonderful Susan Shannon, who was running a program in San Quentin called GRIP, Guiding Rage into Power. But along our conversations, Lucia said, you know, and she's a grown-up with credentials, doctor and everything, but also a pragmatic mystic. And she said, right. To demons, we have to give to them the most wonderful, what's happening here? All right. To demons, we have to give them the most wonderful, you know, invitation. So she was working in a clinic in New York where everyone was having a very dangerous lung infection, mortality. And so she was on night watch, and she said, well, let me just talk to these viruses, going, what's your story? Where are you from? Oh, you're tropical. You don't want to be here in New York. You know, and then she goes, come with me. Right, here's a dark, dank cave in the Caribbean. There you go. Come on here. And the next day, the doctors are like, there's no new outbreaks. And the old outbreaks have reduced. We don't know what happened. Well, we go, sure, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? Right. So. So that's part of, and I think these are all things for us to experiment with. It's our way of rejoining the choreography of creation in a participatory way. Again, the delicious invitations for rogues to go somewhere else. It's the thing I also love from the Symbiosis Festival where Ami and I were emceeing, but we also went to somebody's just really great karaoke performance that was just a class act, and they had this fantastic woman MC, and I'd never seen anything, you know, so well done in this realm. And right as she's about to kind of give out awards, this kind of crazy woman from the audience leaps on stage and starts stripping off her clothes and dry humping everybody. And I go, I don't think that's part of the act, you know. let's see how this person handles it. And the woman was so, again, this is part of our medicine kit. We're going to put all these little things in our portable magic backpacks to take with us to practice at this time. And so the MC was like, you, award, you, there. And she turned to the crazy person and go, and you, dear, you come with me because you are fascinating. and just led her calmly, meekly, gently off stage. And I went backstage afterwards, and the woman was all calm. And it was really good. So, yeah, so that's also one skill, too, going, you come this way because you are fascinating. We're going backstage to the Cauldron of Oblivion where you can be turned into the energy to regenerate forest. You're going to like it. You're going to like it. It's all right. Good. So I think we want some spooky underworld music. Spooky underworld music. There we go.
Your Balema,
And they are flying. Look at them. They are gorgeous.
That's right. And now the bats of the little children of the night have joined us. I don't know if you can see them. So in this brewing time, I go, so it's the medicine gleaned in the underworld that can suck the chi out of the monstrosity that feeds on cruelty. So all of us brewing medicine. And it, like in a fairy tale, you know, when we get assigned, you know, a Plutonian underworld journey, which has often happened, we're often tricked into a journey that we would never, ever choose, right? But it's going to turn out to be good for everybody in some form. You know, and again, cooperating with it. So, all right, so this underworld, the medicine gleaned in the underworld that can suck the chi out of monstrosity that feeds on cruelty. Again, what we need right now, again, is this deep thing. So from every difficult circumstance, everything that has come before us personally and collectively in which we go, ah, oh, no, I'd rather not. We go, oh, where's the, whoops, uh-oh.
They're flying
away.
It's
got a life on its own. Even the bats were like, whoa, no. And that's also, I did host, you know, great ally Susan Shannon on radio, and it was a great show, really, because of her embodied self. I mean, I'm okay, right? But and I don't mean this in self-disparagement, because we throw self-disparagement into the cauldron, but I so enjoyed her deep embodiment of what she was talking about. Now, I did sound a little bit like a flibbity gibbet going, she was like, oh, no, no, no. And so... So the show was about finding freedom under great pressured adversity. You know, we had our great friend Jay Arnall, who was quadriplegic, you know, and we were talking about the amazing things that he did under this incredible constraint, you know, all these things that we go, we have nothing to complain about. And then she spoke about her ministry. You know, she ran the Tibetan Buddhist ministry at San Quentin, including the death row ministry. And she said, you know, these men... She said, for some, you know, it's their opportunity to tell their story truthfully, and she was so honored to be able to be one of the people who could hear it. But she said, you know, not to glamorize, but the amount of transformational energy coming out of San Quentin is a blessing to all of Northern California. Right. And she said, to see these men... under like life sentences and everything, finding that one realm of freedom, and she said, where they come to understand that they are wet clay on the wheel, which is such a great metaphor, right? We're all wet clay on the wheel right now. All these big transits are about deconditioning. We go, all right, wet clay on the wheel, then what do we want to become? And she also told, the whole show is great, I highly recommend it, but she told this a story about her friend Eric, who's in for a life sentence, who came to her and said, you know, I see all these young guys I knew on the street with their cool act and all coming in to San Quentin now. And he said, after a while, you know, one of them's a great guitar player and the other one is a fantastic artist. And he said, you know, it seems to me that if everyone in the world just took a deep pause, we'd all be in really good shape. Yes. So, we're at is such a quirky time, and what customizes it all, it's about ascending and descending. I like to throw a lot of language into the cauldron. I like to throw a lot of everything into the cauldron. It only does everything good to be tossed in, you know, and ladled out and refreshed. But, you know, ascended masters, no, I want descended sorceresses. So ascending, arising, and diving, you know, it's this spiral DNA dance. And so now is the time of the Eleusinian mysteries around the autumnal equinox into now. And that was the longest ritual, entheogenic, for sure, pretty much, that we know of in human history. And everyone was initiated, men, women, children, only if one had murdered and not atoned for it was one excluded. But we know some things. People would gather, they would drink this kind of mushroom ergot, mushroom LSD brew, dance all night. And then everyone saw Persephone having descended a maiden. Costume change. Wait. Take off the bats for a moment. Having descended a maiden, returning as a bleeping initiated queen, right, from that. So that was the Eleusinian mysteries, again, that descent, you know, everyone descending a callow youth, returning a wizard, everyone descending whatever into this, you know, cauldron of initiation, not for status, but for contributing. And right now, What's particularly beautiful, let me describe the symmetry. So right around now, we have what's called the heliacal rise of Mars. Mars has been invisible, called in the underworld, for some months. And now, right before sunrise, I've been up two sunrises squinting, going, Mars, oh, good enough for mythological work, I'm going back to bed. Okay, but I think I might have seen Mars. But anyway, but catch it. Mars is rising before the sun. It's that beautiful phrase, the heliacal rise, which all cultures would note, because the heliacal return of a planet represents a whole new cycle for what that planet represents. In this case, Mars, Yang, woofiness, what we reward in heroes. You know, and Mars is in Libra, right, in Venus's sign, emerging, the green man, the wizard, within all of us. I so prefer the astrological language of Mars and Venus to men and women, right? Because there's a Mars and Venus dynamic, you know, always fluctuating within all of us in some way, you know. And at the same time, so Mars is emerging as the morning star. And at the same time, Venus has been in the underworld, invisible, and she's emerging out of the gloaming at sunset as the evening star in Scorpio, Mars's sign, right? So Mars is the morning star. Venus is emerging to be the evening star. They are in what's called mutual reception. Mars is in Libra, Venus's sign. Venus is in Scorpio, Mars's sign, which is just very wonderfully spicy, you know. And it brought to mind two things. We had part one Mabinogian, but here's part two, a little short Mabinogian, early 12th century. Because, see, all the myths are really, everything, all of our ancestors, all the myths are concerned for us. So in the early 12th century, in the Mabinogian, the quote is, "Yet war itself, not any race or tribe, is the enemy that shall pull down all that we of the old tribes have built. Among us, neither man nor woman was ever master. All walked free." So, language play. I like composting. How long will we have wars? As long as we keep using it as a metaphor. And that includes, you know, just lots of things. You know, I like throwing the word vulnerable as a virtue. Whoops. The bats agree. Into the cauldron. Oh, never mind. I like throwing vulnerable because it comes from the battlefield. It means woundable. You know, and I don't think that's a great relationship basis. You know, love makes you vulnerable. It's like, no, obsession makes you vulnerable, maybe, but love is really pretty good for everybody. You know, and then, you know, all the things that we do going, oh, that really triggered me. We go, well, that makes you a gun, right? Do we really want to? I think we are. So I think it's also very, I found it quite fun to wherever there's warrior talk, war talk, you know, to just replace it with Mars. And I so love The Art of Peace and Mora Hei O Eshaba. So he says, those who practice the Art of Peace must protect the domain of Mother Nature, the divine reflection of creation, and keep it lovely and fresh. Warriorship gives birth to natural beauty. The subtle techniques of a warrior arise as naturally as the appearance of spring, summer, autumn, and winter. Warriorship is none other than the vitality that sustains all life. But see, I find it very liberating to go back through that and just put in Mars. Mars is none other than the vitality that sustains all life. That's what all of that that's been, you know, kidnapped into the unimaginative and horrific confines of war. You know, Mars's real task is the vitality that sustains all life. So we love that. So we do want to throw some things into the cauldron. So we've all been given not only a customized underworld, but it comes completely furnished with a cauldron into which we can throw things and ladle things out. And as part of our skill set, you know, when we see sketchy and awful things in ourselves and others, we go, now what did this want to be before it got snookered and bamboozled? And how do we cook it back to its originating, liberating impulse and grant it its autonomy again in some form? So I like throwing everything into the cauldron. We want our standards, everything into the cauldron with the criterion, all teachings, I mean everything. It only does things good to be, you know, we're heretics. And remember, heretic was a term of praise in all early religions because it means free thinker, that which keeps, you know, authenticity alive in the community. Only later, once we get a priesthood, right, will heretic get you killed. So welcome, heretics, right there. Right? Come on back in, you know. All that's been ecstatically exiled, all the King Arthurs, all the things, all that's been exiled. Because in astrology, Neptune, Pisces, those realms that are also humming right now, Neptune dreams and vision, how a culture tells itself its own story is pretty much straight up overhead in its home realm of Pisces, you know, which is the realm of all myths and all music and all stories that have ever moved humans to conscious kinship. And I liken it to all the critters on this planet, you know, meeting backstage going, what are we going to do about the humans? We got to either kill them or heal them. Let's do both. You know, let's make everything that, again, has ever moved humans to participation available for fresh expression. So, you know, so Neptune, you know, we throw everything into the cauldron and we go, all teachings, does it guide people to their own autonomy, right? Because I think it's time for priesthoods to go into the cauldron, really, you know, direct thing of any sneaky kind, right? These things are wonderfully sneaky, going, the 144 special save people, it's like, well, whatever your dingy hierarchical mythology, welcome aboard, you know, we can use you somewhere. So it is very sneaky, the specialness thing. And we go, no, because that's where the wrathful Dakinis, they cook the toxin of anger into the tonic of wrath, fierce protection of life. They take the toxin, they cook the toxin of seduction into the tonic of magnetism, bring everything alive. What's constraining and for small, hungry ghost status, and what is liberating and feels good. We know these, we can feel these things immediately, right? So does it guide people to their own autonomy? Is it equal Mars and Venus, men and women? Is it equal humans and the rest of our kin? Is the trickster, the liberating trickster, playful dynamic welcome? Then all, yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling and boiling. So we might want to say, well, you know, again, the Buddha was asked, you know, 500 BC, Shariputra, by what is the world polluted? By corruption and greed, he said, you know, 2,500 years ago. And we go, right. So corruption into the cauldron. And, you know, we don't even have words for it, whatever it was, when the inauguration of this toxic mimic of leadership was... I threw the I Ching, you know, going I Ching, and it was very specific. It says, this is the darkest form of black magic in which five venomous creatures are put in a jar until one of them kills and eats the others. I'm like, that's pretty good political reporting. So the corruption, right? It's we're back to the metaphor. That which has forgotten has lost the capacity to cooperate and has no respect for boundaries. It's colonialism. It's whatever. It's the rapacious cells. It's, I mean, all of this, you know. I think social media also, you know, can be the great word chronophagic, right, which is time eating. Right. But also, you know, according to how we calibrate, which is the value of, you know, declaring to ourselves what we're dedicated to, you can tap in. And sometimes, so on Twitter, sometimes the, you know, it makes you proud to be human, really. Or you get, so I had posted like, oh, Bill Barr is investigating Epstein's suicide, right? And my Twitter partner said, ah, well, Epstein died from complications of Epstein-Barr. Good one. That's really good. And just to draw from all over, you know, the Woody Guthrie song, some will rob you with a six gun and some with a fountain pen, right? And we go, yeah. Right. And then it's just a quote I just had to stick in here randomly just because it's, you know, upscale. In A Man for All Seasons, Robert Bolt's play about Sir Thomas More, right, and this is sort of a Saturn theme, that it is, all of these things are, I hope everybody, we all go chew and keep and throw into the cauldron what we're putting out tonight to, you know, take some of it and experiment with it. But, so there's a great moment where Sir Thomas More is saying to Roper, and it's great too, he said, I can imagine selling one's soul, but for whales? Anyway, you sold it too cheap. So he says, you would cut down every law in the land to get to the devil. And Roper says, yes, I'd cut down every law in England to do that. And Moore says, oh, and when the last law was down and the devil turned round on you, where would you hide, Roper, the laws all being flat? Anyway, it's an upscale quote that is not quite as moving to you as I thought it might be. But I just had to stick it in there somewhere. So let us remember that Trump, it was on Putin's birthday that Trump gave Turkey the permission to slaughter the Kurds. Because he's born a week earlier than me. I'm going, what are you doing with our chart? How about I go to the gym more and you sleep in more? You know, something. So they keep not mentioning that crucial fact. It was on Putin's birthday that he did this thing. It's so kinky. So I was going, okay. So the Kurds, you know, let me reverse set this up. What is everything in the dream world? How does it speak to us according to our own education and the different chapters of our life? So I had a long and ongoing and richly informing, you know, deep anarchism, you know, reading lots and all of that. And so I read the great works of Murray Bookchin, wonderful American anarchist. And it was from Murray Bookchin that I learned about the Ukraine. And what I know about the Ukraine... is very moving. Is that in the Russian Revolution, the Ukraine was a full-on successful anarchist experiment, meaning democratic animism and everything, many services provided. And so at the end of the Russian Revolution, their cooperative dynamic was, we're doing this experiment, and if you want to be part of it, you're welcome, and if you don't, that's fine. You know, that's wonderful, too. So they had the only province in Russia that had doctors and educated people because nobody was being killed, and they all would come around to this experiment. And Trotsky said, turn over your army. It was the best army in Russia. And they were like, no. And he's like, well, come for a meeting. And they're like, okay. And he killed them all. Right. So, you know, and the Seattle General Strike of 1910, where everything was run for, you know, these little moments, right? We want to reach back. So I learned from Murray Bookchin about the anarchists in the Ukraine. The Kurdish people, especially the Kurdish women, were all inspired by Murray Bookchin and what they were doing in that land, their homeland that has been obliterated just now in the last week because of Putin's birthday bromance. So it was, you know, and many of you might remember in the battle for Kobani, and these are complex things. We want complex nuance, you know, multiple layers of stories, nothing simple. You know, we don't reject anything going, you know, whatever we speak to another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves, right? Which is why we don't want to judge, because it's inviting the least interesting part of somebody to dance with the least evolved part of ours. Mm. But to discern. So it was complex, because the women Kurdish fighters, who were extraordinary and who are dedicated egalitarian democratic anarchists, they were very brave, and also the ISIS or Daesh really were terrified, because if you are killed by a woman, you won't go to paradise. And so the women were like, and part of me was like, you know, so we're stuck with the name ISIS, you know, for this group of sociopathic boys with no Venus. But let's go with the real ISIS, as though, like, you know, that, like the little wafty thing outside of car dealers. I just sort of thought ISIS wafting above, you know, going, you're all gonna die. And I also like I like also going, no, it's not 100 virgins, it's 100 angry vegans you're gonna meet. Oh. So. But there is, you know, as we know, this incredible perversity. It's like the desire to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which, you know, Sarah James Guichin has been indefatigably protecting, and her people for the longest time. And she said, oh, thank you, yeah, exactly. And she's often said, you know, many important great things, but she says, don't call it ANWR, don't call it an acronym, because it will lose intimacy, and then they'll drill it. Just say the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Language has power, right? Mm-hmm. And it is the place where all life begins. That's its name. And what is this perversity that not even that much oil to just destroy these things? In the same way, the Ukraine, like kind of its history, and then this very beautiful experiment of the Kurds, you know, collaborative experiments, again, target that. And so there is this tremendous perversity, and again, we honor the dead, we honor the and with grief and honor the death of Elijah Cummings, wonderful man, Maryland, and also of Havrim Khalaf, the Secretary General of the Future Syria Party, Women's Rights, who was killed in a horrific fashion on last Saturday. There is blood and sadness on the hands of this. But part of the complexity, right, is that when the Kurdish women were largely defending Kobani, and ISIS was there, they wanted American bombing support, right? And so it's tricky nuance team. We go, oh, no, America, bad army. And it's like, yeah, but this was a different kind of dynamic. And so it was the support, the air support that prevented the Kurdish women from being slaughtered and from them progressing until now. So it's also, I very much enjoyed hosting Terrence Ward, author of a really good book, The Wahhabi Code. His niece, he lives in Florence, you know, came and said, you know, all of us 16-year-olds, please explain, you know, Middle Eastern terrorism to us. He goes, okay. And he said, few Westerners know that before 1928, Mecca was a place of global Sufi tolerance and exploration of beauty and dance and poetry. Okay. And in 1928, the Wahhabis, the Saud, you know, take over, and they pave over paradise. They take the prophet's daughter's house and put a parking lot on top of it. Mm. They're destroying the past. You know, and that is also the issue of the Saudis. And then he delineates, the beauty of Islam. You know, and then the Saudis going, we will kill you or give you $5 million. You know, which would you like? You know, and we go, that's so much. So like you know, Epstein had to die, right? Because he knew so much. Friend who's quite informed said a third of the scientific research in this country was funded by Epstein. Mm. Epstein and Mohammed bin Salman. Epstein was managing a lot of Mohammed bin Salman's money. It's all one story. It's all one Dementor's story. And so when we think about leadership in 2020, it's like, can we create the atmosphere where an actual ethical, informed person dedicated to collective well-being could possibly be elected against Saudi, Russia, Israel, pharmaceuticals, you know, and we go, you betcha. You know, against all odds or the odds that Trickster likes, you know, we're going to go do this thing. You know, and I don't know how many of you saw the truly demonic photo of Trump and Mark Zuckerberg kind of staring into each other's eyes, you know. 1.6 million a week, you know. You know, the intensity of the, I can't even read my notes here, of the flailing the intensity of the, we know it's going to get horrible, right? And the vituperative flailing, I think that's what I wrote there. But then we go, but what is the, if that's the demonic photo, you know, the positive one, if that's the toxic mimic, is that incredible photo of Greta Thunberg and Jane Goodall gazing into each other's eyes. Like, that's really it.
This has been a pre-recorded episode of Visionary Activist with Caroline Casey. Up next, Cover to Cover. Oh, yeah,